How are you?
No, I think it was great.
Hi, I'm Brian.
How are you?
How are you?
No,
stay. You can't go anywhere.
No, I'm not a numbers guy.
But more so a reason to stay.
How are you? Good to see you.
Yeah. We're going to get started.
There's room over there, Sheila.
Okay.
Please make yourself comfortable.
Hello. There are more seats over here if you would like. We're getting ready for the presentation. It's being put up in a few seconds. Guys, there's more room here. Thank you for participating. This is a public session, and we have therefore remote participation, and we'll check in a minute or two what remote participants we have present. Thank you for attending. I think it's the first time we don't have enough seats. And I was going to say we have nearly all board members that participate to the Board Finance Committee present. So thank you for all of them to participate and be present. Yeah, Mike, there's another seat over there. So thank you for the board members of the Finance Committee to be present. It will be very helpful to have your input along this presentation. Taryn, do we have the presentation and remote participation? Okay. Yes. Sorry. This is why we need to be able to set up before the meeting. So I will start. I will start anyway. So we will check who we have present in remote participation as soon as we can. In the meantime, welcome to the finance public session. Thank you for attending. As the meeting, the SICAN meeting is in LA, I have also the pleasure to have most of the finance and procurement teams present in the room as well with us. So this is a welcome addition to the attendance. Thank you for coming. We will go over the agenda shortly. We will start with a quick look at FY14, the end of FY14. We are close to completing the audit, but we will provide nonetheless a quick view of the financial position at the end of FY14. So as to be able to provide you with a very quick understanding of where we are landing. We will then look at the FY15 budget process and its conclusion over the past few weeks and look together at a few elements of it. We will then talk about the forward-looking process for FY16, and start with a framework of planning that Fadi provided a view of earlier this morning. And we'll then talk about a revenue recognition change as well as just an update on the audit of ICANN's financial statements. We have a few remote participants. And we will, so after each of the section, we'll allow about 5 minutes of Q&A. And that should leave us with a little bit of time still at the end for more Q&A. So we will limit ourselves to 5 minutes of Q&A at the end of each section. And Taryn is going to time me. If you would like to be put in the queue for questions during the presentation, please raise your hand, and Cherry present here will make a list of the people in the queue. Can I start? Can we switch the slide to the slides? Sure. Okay. So what I suggest to do is to, while we're waiting for the presentation, I will address the last subject in the presentation because I don't need the slides for that. So the last subject is simply about to provide an update on the annual independent auditor. You may know that ICANN is, as a not-for-profit organization, is required to have its financial statements audited on an annual basis. And that's been, this is as per the status of the organization. It's a standard type of annual independent audit, like most companies do. We, and that's been happening since the inception of ICANN. The organization had used the services of Moss Adams, an accounting firm present in the U.S. and largely on the west side of the U.S., as well as participating to an international network. We have used the services of Moss Adams for about 8 years, and the audit committee of the board had been contemplating for a while the logical and natural evolution of changing auditors as the organization evolves. It's also considered a best practice to be able to rotate auditors on a more or less recurring basis. The best practice is between 3 and 5 years. And during the tenure of Moss Adams, the partner changed after 4 years from memory. So that best practice was respected in that case. But it was time for looking at a new auditor. And we conducted an RFP request for proposals after the audit committee approved to proceed. And we received 5 bids. It was an open RFP to anyone. We received 5 bids. Interestingly, none of the big four accounting firms bid for a relatively simple reason, is that they had a conflict of interest in providing services otherwise to ICANN, either through the new GTLD program or for other subjects. As a result, they were not interested in bidding on the annual independent audit. We received bids from the next 4 largest international firms, and we, through a process of evaluation, which was presented to the audit committee, through a process of evaluation, we retained one of those 4 firms, the fifth largest firm in the world, which is called BDO. And the BDO auditors have started their work in April 2014 and are in the process of concluding their work in the next week or so. Is there any question on that subject? Marilyn, thank you.
Thank you.
If you can provide your name. Sorry, I know you do it very well, but for everybody else, please provide your names at the beginning of your question. Thank you.
My name is Marilyn Cade. I'm one of the officers of the business constituency. My question is just, I'm actually quite pleased to see that the rigor of our conflict of interest process did appropriately eliminate a number of applicants, and I think that's actually good news to all of us. But my question is more about the present auditors, and I know auditors like to think that they can audit anything, anywhere, anytime. But we're a quite strange animal. So built into the bid, was there, and I apologize, I didn't pay attention to the criteria, was there some underlying assumption that they would, that they have a background also in auditing the not-for-profit world and the world that's more similar to the one we have, including the fact that we have a tax status, which is extremely important, or a non-tax status, which is extremely important to protect.
Thank you. Yes, the criteria included to have a very strong knowledge of not-for-profit in general. So in that respect, the BDO has a very large not-for-profit practice. This not-for-profit practice is headed by the partner who is on our audit, so we benefit from that experience. As part of the RFP, there was also a requirement to have the team or the bidders demonstrate knowledge in technology companies in addition to not-for-profit, so that we also have the benefit of knowledge in accounting and auditing practices relative to that type of companies, which in some aspects we are a little bit similar to as well. So we feel that we did get that with BDO. Not all organizations were able to provide both aspects. And the conflict of interest, we didn't have much to apply it ourselves in terms of selection. The audit firms have very strong conflict of interest requirements, and they ruled themselves out by not bidding. Effectively, we didn't have, at the end of the day, to rule anyone out. Of course, the bidders provided visibility as to their lack of conflict of interest, and there's no board member of the audit committee here, but the auditors have repeated formally their lack of conflict. So we feel we are very strong on that point. Thank you for that question. So I'm not going to go backwards on the agenda. I will start from the beginning and we'll just ignore the last point. So FY14, we will look first at the an overview of the operations financials for FY14. And by operations, I mean everything but the new GTLD program, which has its own set of books. Revenue expenses are fully segregated. So this first section looks at everything but the new GTLD program. The second will be the focus on the new GTLD program. And the third is the aggregation of the two. Next. Thank you. So simply put, for the operations for FY14, there's relatively little variations at the high level between what the actual figures are versus the budgeted figures for FY14. I fail to indicate here that we're talking about million of US dollars here. I should have put that on the slide, and I apologize. So these are unaudited numbers, because the audit is not yet concluded. These are unaudited numbers. It's millions of US dollars. Our revenue is slightly lower than budgeted, and you may remember when we looked at the forecasted numbers for the year in London, the main reason why that is the case is because the new coming from the fixed fee from the newly delegated registries was lower than what we originally budgeted as a result of the slower ramp up of delegations into the route of the new registries. So we ended up the year, if you remember, from this morning's presentation by Fadi, at 322 registries, and we had a number that was a bit higher in the budget, and therefore the revenue is a bit lower. Expenses are about on par, and as a result, the net asset change, which in other organizations is called a profit or loss, for us it's either an excess or a deficit. In this case, it's an excess of 6 million, which is compared to about the 8 million of the budget. This number includes both investments gains from our reserve fund, as well as the repayment from the new GTLD program of the historical development costs. I apologize for the acronym here. This is what this means. So you may remember that the program, the fees of the program included provisions for the repayment by the program application fees of the costs incurred by the ICANN operations to develop and design the program until the time it started. Next, please. Thank you. So this is now the new GTLD program's financials compared to budget as well. Larger variances here. So let me start by explaining as simply as possible one thing. The revenue of the program corresponds to the fraction of the application fees that had been received in 2012 being recognized in revenues during the year FY14. The fees collected all up front are progressively recognized as revenue, along as a prorata of the expenses incurred for the program. So the amount of revenue is directly a function of the amount of expenses incurred. These expenses incurred are lower than what the budget was assuming because the program, as all of you know, over the past 15 months has actually progressed slower than was originally planned. Remember that these numbers were basically finalized about a year and a half ago, in April 2013, and at that time it was expected that the program would progress faster. The other element that affected the difference between the difference between revenue and budgeted and actuals, you may notice that the ratio is not necessarily the same between the two. Based on the progress of the program, we adjusted the financial forecast to extend it by 2 years until FY17, which was not the case until then. So by basically spreading the same amount of revenue over a longer period of time, the amount of revenue per year is actually lower than what it was before we extended it by 2 years. So this is a simple mechanics of the program accounting. Next. So when you aggregate those two views together, operations and UGTLD, you arrive at the total revenue and expenses for the organization, which corresponds to the scope of the corporation. And oddly enough, we have a net asset change of zero on operations with an equal amount of revenue to the expenses. Investments have produced gains of 11 million, which was not necessarily expected in the budget, not because we're not necessarily trying to do a lot of projections on investments, either gains or losses, especially last year when the variations of the market were relatively high. And that was compared to a larger, so we have an 11 million excess compared to a 47 million excess in the budget. Remember that that was coming essentially from the new GTLD program's recognition. Let me stop here, and I think there are questions. I know I have Chris in the queue, and then Jimson. Please, Chris.
Thanks, Xavier. Would you just go back a slide for me, please? And another one. You may have said this, I may have missed it. Higher LS means down in expenses. Underneath
language services.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, it's not entirely obvious. Thank you for the question. Jimson, thank you.
My name is Jimson Olufuye of the Business Constituency. Well, I heard this morning, and you alluded to it just now, that about 320 GTLD were delegated. But at the same time, on the new GTLD domain, it's shown here that 417 domains were completely delegated. So I don't understand.
So the difference is that the number 322 is stopped as of June 30th. On the day of June 30th, we had 322 TLDs delegated at the time. Since then, we have about 90 more. As simple as that. Thank you. Any more questions? Taryn, how am I doing on time? Okay. Next section, please. So we're going to catch up all together on what happened since London on the budget. and we will go over an overview of the changes between the draft budget that was submitted for public comment and the final budget. We will look at the final numbers after those changes. We'll go over the public comment summary, and we will look more specifically then at the USG transition costs. The reason for that is it's one of the requests from a number of community members to have more visibility on those costs. And as I indicated in a call with the registries a couple of weeks ago, I have updated the information that we provided in the responses to public comment to provide a bit more detail, and that's what we will look at next. So July 1st was the end of the public comment period. It had started May 8th from memory, so it was a 52-day public comment period. From there until about mid-August, the staff worked on two things: consolidate the comments, review them, distribute them across the staff members who have more expertise on each of the topics covered by the comments, and then consolidate responses, review them. We also submitted them for a review in summary by the Finance Committee of the Board. In parallel, we also looked at our revenue projections that were embedded into the draft budget, and I will speak more about that a bit later. And that led us to identify required changes to certain of the numbers, which was consistent with the public comments received from a number of you, indicating that the revenue projections and the expense projections appeared aggressive or too optimistic. Sorry, can we stay there for a second? Thank you. So on August 19th, the Board Finance Committee was submitted with a revised version of the budget, as well as a summary of the public comments for their review. And the BFC on that day recommended approval of that revised budget to the board. The board approval happened on the September 9th, which was the timing as by which the board met in Istanbul right after the IGF, as most of you know, which delayed a little bit the original timing that we intended on the board approval. And on September 23rd, we finalized the publication of the responses to public comment. And we'll talk about that a bit more. So I'm not going to walk anyone through the entire set of those numbers. This is the analysis that was provided and reviewed in relative detail by the Board Finance Committee, as well as by the board, on our revenue projections. So how much resources are we going to have? We had planned in the draft budget for a number of $114 million of revenues. Fast-forwarding 3 or 4 months, more information available, more perspective on the start of the FY15 year, because we were in July and our FY15 year started 1st of July, so we had much more information, tangible information, to be able to revise our revenue assumptions. And we developed a model of low, medium, and high scenario to try to also have a sense of sensitivity of our assumptions of revenues. And the medium scenario landed at $104 million of revenues. And that's the number that was suggested to be approved by the board, which is therefore $10 million lower than what the draft budget was. Again, this was consistent with a number of comments that we had received during the public comment process on the how our revenues were growing and on the assumptions that we had retained for to calculate that revenue projection. one element that I know a number of people here are looking at and have in mind. We had assumed originally that we would have about 33 million transactions in FY15. The revised assumption for that number is 15 million of transactions to be generated over FY15 by the new registries. So time will tell how right we are or wrong we are, but this is, remember that this is to be generated by approximately between 322 and 1,000 registries that will be in the route by the end of FY15, depending upon the timing. Cherry, you have Marilyn. Thank you. Next. Thank you. So the changes.
Excuse me. Question? No question.
If you don't mind, we'll wait at the end of the section and we can come back on the slide. Thank you. It's to keep me in check on moving forward, Marilyn. So you can see at the top here the revenue change of 10 million that we just looked at. And consequently, we revised the expenses down as well. So if you bear with me for a second, there's two different things that happened. We reduced expenses by the 10 million accordingly. There's also an increase that we identified of 2 million of USG transition related expenses, and we will look at that more specifically in the section 2.5, which therefore drove a change of an increase of 2 million of the deficit. We had some savings also of capital expenditure. And here you can see that the numbers here are the same than here. This is reflecting that the USG expense, the USG transition expenses, are covered by the reserve fund, and therefore funding from the reserve fund will be utilized to cover for those expenses. That's one of the assumptions of the budget. As a result, we had a balanced set of expenditures versus revenue before, a balanced change, and balanced budget at the end. Next. So this is a bit more detail on the expenses reductions. There's no hiring freeze at ICANN. I've heard that word being mentioned earlier. It's not the case. We have spread over time the hirings that were included in the budget and delayed them by about, on average, 3 months. So we are basically spreading and taking more time to hire, which is a softer approach. Travel, we also revised the travel. Here, this is about, it's not a specific set of activities. It's simply asking the entire staff to look at their trips and cut one out of 10, whichever one works. And it could be simply when you have three people planning to go to a meeting, can you guys do it with two instead of three so that we save one trip? That's the approach that's been retained. So it's been distributed. It's relatively painless in the sense of it's not affecting an activity in particular. It's requiring people to be a bit more cautious in the way they plan, which is the result of that. Professional services, a bit the same thing. Try to reduce sometimes the scope, sometimes the price, negotiate a bit more. This is also entirely distributed across the organization. It's not one project or process specifically. We also affected the contingency, and Fadi will, with us, look very strictly at what funding is requested from the staff on unbudgeted expenses. The USG transition-related expenses, as I mentioned earlier, indicated that they had increased by 2 million. So this is what expenses that were in the operating expenses that are transferred to the USG transition bucket. We also noted that on the basis of not having sponsors for a number of the upcoming ICANN meetings, that the gala, which usually is funded or sponsored by a sponsor or the host of the country where we go, that in lack of sponsors, we felt that it was more reasonable to not have a gala expense, which can be, as you know, quite significant. So effectively, this is two galas that we're assuming are not going to happen. Three galas. And even though, so that's basically 200K per gala, and which I think is actually on the low end of the cost of galas sometimes. And we had also capital expenditure reduction over several projects. So as I indicated, there's no specific activity or specific project that's been canceled, taken out of the plan. It's basically spreading across the organization, the reduction of expenses. The resulting budget is this one. We talked about the 104 million of revenues, the expenses that result from that. And so it's a bit complicated, but I will nonetheless mention that the expenses here include the USG transition costs. Again, we will look at those a little bit later. And which therefore drive a slight deficit. The repayment of the historical development cost brings it back to a slight excess. And that's only the operations side of the budget. The new GTLD side of the budget is very lightly affected by those changes, just very minimally. So in yellow, you have the areas impacted by the 10 million change of revenue and expenses. These areas are very minimally impacted by adjustments on the program, and the total is here. Let me stop there because I think Marilyn had a question on the numbers, and before we move on to the public comment, I wanted to make sure we address the question on the numbers.
Thank you. Can I just? It's Marilyn Cade. Is Chris Chaplow on the phone, Carol? No. I want to go back to the numbers of what you call transactions.
Yes.
I think you, transactions to those of us who come from the computer world, translates into network transactions. I think in that case you meant domain names registered at the second level. Is that right?
Nearly. So transactions, as per the contract, mean each annual increment of a registration.
Mm-hmm.
Which could be 5 for a 5-year registration of one name.
Okay.
Transfer or a deletion.
Okay. So let me be specific about my question. This is Marilyn Cade speaking, the CSG officer for the business constituency. In my view, there were irrationally exuberant forecasts about the number of registrations that would take place in the new GTLDs. And many of us asked for economic studies and needs assessment, and we didn't get what we asked for. And this is important to us because we are very concerned about what we call fallover, failure. On the basis of the number of new GTLDs that are in the route today and the number of paid for registrations that represent revenue to, and I want to be careful here, I refer to ICANN as the not-for-profit corporation, not the corporation, because we've got to be careful that we don't keep using this word company and corporation and we mislead people, including the new applicants, to think that we're just a commercial enterprise selling franchises. We're not. So we had a forecast of the number of new GTLDs. Can you help me understand, based on that forecast, how many actual paid registrations do we have paid, not given away? Because, you know, this registry gave away 10,000, this one gave away 25,000. How many are paid? Where are we on a forecast? If we have 300 and some names in the route, how many names are actually producing revenue so that we can actually understand whether or not there is going to be a viable base of new registrations which represent predictable revenue to the not-for-profit corporation.
So the number of registries that produced revenue in FY14 is 322, simply because that's the fixed fee part of the subject and everyone contributed as per their contract. You're speaking, I think, most about the transaction part of the fee, which, to make it simple, is triggered by a registry registering a number of transactions of 50,000 or more during a quarter or during four consecutive quarters. Two domain names exceeded that 50,000 threshold by the end of June. Yes. Dot Berlin and another one, which name is now escaping me. Dot Guru, thank you. I was opening my computer because I need to access a spreadsheet that provides the assumed number of names that do the same thing in the FY15 revenue. I don't remember. I have the number. So I will provide a specific answer. And there are assumptions behind this number. There are assumptions of how many registries above 50,000 transactions per quarter and how many registries remain under 50,000 transactions per quarter.
Just a real quick follow-up question. Why did you decide, I mean, in a highly specialized GTLD where there, and I'm going to use Dot Arrow from the past, there are 5,000 possible registrants. Why did you decide to use 50,000 per quarter? Does that mean we don't know what the count is for the others, or there's some other way of capturing the count?
So the 50,000 is the contractual threshold as per which a fee is charged. Under it, there's no fee, no transaction fee, sorry. That's the only reason why we're using. So for modeling revenues, I need to have an assumption of who's going to be generating a fee. And under 50,000 transactions, if you have 49,000 transactions, you don't pay any fee to ICANN for transactions as a registry, right?
So real quick, since we are the franchisee, what do we get out of having a registry that's not paying us any money after they pay the initial fee? Do they pay another annual fee?
So they pay a fixed fee of $6,250 per quarter or $25,000 per year, and a transaction fee that kicks in above the threshold of 50,000 that I just mentioned. There's another question, two other questions. You're good, Leonid? So we have, sorry, I don't have your name.
Hello, I'm Ollie Hope from the Host Europe Group. I just wanted to clarify there. So you're saying the 18 cents per domain, is that what you're referring to? If you don't have more than 50,000 registrations, the registrant or wherever we pass that up the line, that doesn't get paid?
It's 25 cents, but yes.
Sorry, okay.
Yes.
My apologies, 25 cents.
Yeah, that's
but we've still got 15 million. We're expecting